chip and 20 soldiers in Paris of the Eiffel Tower is wearing a beret.
Why, hello.
Welcome to He Saw, She Saw.
If you're just joining us, I am Keith.
And I am Corey.
And we love movies.
Just not the same ones.
So every week we make the other watch a movie that we love,
but that the other one has no interest in or would never watch unless they were doing a podcast episode about it.
And then we talk about it.
This week, we are reaching back into our childhoods.
Or teenagedoms.
Our coming of ages.
We don't have to watch Rock of Ages, right? Because I tried to watch that one and that was just really bad.
I haven't seen Rock of Ages.
It's a 80s jukebox musical.
Yes, for the I know 80s and... what it is. I just have not seen it. You know what? I take that back. Good Boys, the one of the little kids, he's the lead in Rock of Ages because his drama teacher is edgy. Yeah, you saw that movie. I made you see it.
No, I saw Good Boys. I just don't remember seeing them in Rock of Ages.
Yeah, the one friend like wanted to like sing and be like in drama.
So they're doing Rock of Ages in the movie.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right.
And I'm sorry.
Kids are pretending to do drugs and smoke and stuff like that.
Off the backs of strippers' butts and stuff like
Gosh. That was much more entertaining, even that recreation, than the actual, I don't know.
Than the actual play.
Yeah.
The movie with Tom Cruise,
no,
right?
that's what I saw. I saw parts of that movie, and I was just like, nah.
However, Good Boys is a movie we cannot do on this podcast, right?
Because we both love it.
Oh, my gosh,
it was
you
so
guys.
Inappropriate, but hilarious.
Those kids are so talented.
Those three actors are the future of acting, because they were hilarious and funny and clearly still like 12 or something like that.
Yes.
So.
Oh, my gosh. Such a good
I'm
movie.
Not going to be shocked if any of those people become famous.
So anyway, speaking of boys coming of age, you get to watch The Goonies. Sean Astin, this is Corey Feldman. I had a huge crush on Corey Feldman. Martha Plimpton is amazing.
Yeah, and then what you get to watch is you get to watch a movie called Toy Soldiers, which I don't know if it ever was in the theater. I'm guessing it was.
Oh, it had to be.
Would have had to have been.
Now, Martika did the theme song, right?
She did do us. I think she
step
did.
Step by step, heart to heart, left, right, left,
we all fall down
like a toy soldier.
I actually discovered this movie on like TBS or TNT or something. I would always watch it whenever it was on.
Well, I watched it on video when it came out. And ask me what I remember about it.
What do you remember about it?
I don't remember anything about it. Sean Astin is in it, and that's all I remember. I don't even know who else is in it.
Yeah, Pots and Pans. You're going to love it.
Pots and Pans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Pots and Pans. It'll make sense once we watch the movie.
Okay. Well, it's our time. It's our time down here. That's my favorite line.
Okay.
You'll get it when you watch it.
Isn't it Short Round in this movie, too?
Is it what?
Isn't Short Round from Indy 2?
Oh, yes. I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't. So we'll see. We'll see how this goes. I'm not sure. Yeah. From Indiana. That's his character name from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
I don't think I saw that. I know I saw an Indiana Jones movie.
I love when you do that on purpose. You're like, I know it's Indiana Jones, but I'm going to say Indiana Jones and I'm going to watch, like Keith said, explode. What's that wrestler's name? Steampunk?
That's my favorite.
So I'm not sure what you can think of Toy Soldier, but I can't wait to see it again.
All right. Well, I hope I remember it this time. I didn't realize that Joe Pantoliano was in this movie until I saw his name in the credits. And then I realized right away.
Yeah, I should have realized it was him.
I was too young to know.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I saw the name, I think we both at the same time went,
of course.
Duh.
Yeah.
I like that we have revelations together.
We do. Yeah. So what did you think watching this movie again? Did it hold up?
I love this movie. Mm-hmm. I still love this movie. It's so fun. I love all the individual characters. I did watch the making of afterwards because that's part of the DVD that I have. I think that Richard Donner really let them kind of go, like improvise and try stuff out. It's a fun movie. I didn't realize it until this viewing. I was like, gosh, this just feels like Disneyland to me. Why was this never a Disneyland ride?
Literally, they tried to make it like the pirate ship.
Yeah.
Richard Donner tried to give it to multiple amusement parks and no one would take it.
I read that.
And I'm just like, how did you not?
Because nobody wanted it.
I mean, at the very least, a water park.
Something.
Yeah, missed opportunity there, I think.
Totally. So, Keith, do you have a pitch for this movie?
Sure. A group of ragtag kids are about to lose their homes to greedy developers unless they can find a lost pirate's treasure while avoiding a deadly old criminal and our diabolical, yet dysfunctional adult children. The odds may be impossible, but Goonies never say die. So the movie opens with a notorious criminal, Jake Fratelli, played by Universal bad guy Robert Davi, breaking out of jail. And he's being helped by his psychotic younger brother, who we later figured out was Joe Pantoliano.
Can I just tell you, this will make it easy for us. Mm-hmm. I tried to watch the commentary afterwards, mm-hmm. and they actually gave him a nickname.
Is it Joey Pants?
It's Joey Pants. So yeah. Let's just call him Joey Pants.
I was thinking the same thing as I was going through this. It's like, why haven't we just called him Joey Pants this whole time?
It's too hard to say the whole name. Sorry, Joey okay. Pants.
Yeah, so Joey, incredibly well done, role played by him. More hair, even though it's shown to be a toupee later. Yes. But anyway. Jake is being helped by his younger brother and their mother, Ann Ramsey, who, if you watched movies in the 80s, you immediately recognize her. She's this cranky, Americanized Boris from Rocky and Bullwinkle. She's always wearing, like, all black. She's got a
mean face. She's like, she is resting bitch face.
She is. She is the personification. Old resting, although I'm imagining she's probably not that much older than we are right now. So I'm going to go ahead and stop. Yeah. So
actually, she was a lovely woman.
I would imagine. In the midst of this car chase is going through this town of Astoria, which we're in, we kind of get introduced individually one by one to these kids who are going to make up the Goonies. Mm-hmm. So it centers around an asthmatic kid named Mikey, played by Sean Astin in his first feature role. He's about eighth grade is kind of what we establish. He and his older brother, who's like a senior in high school, Brand, is played by Josh Brolin, looking a lot like a young Ryan Reynolds. Like, I didn't realize that before.
Yeah, he does.
And then this movie, it's like, oh, that explains the friendship. That explains the,
Are they friends?
Oh, yeah. When they were in Deadpool 2, there was a lot of like kind of.
There was a Deadpool 2?
There was. I feel like we now have a couple movies we're watching now. So he's playing a jock, and it's hilarious because workout outfits in the 80s.
The runner shorts over the sweatpants.
It's as ridiculous as Superman wearing, it's that level to me.
He's got the accessories too. He's got the headband.
And he's got a red bandana that's kind of like for sweat.
He's really into fitness.
He is really into fitness. So anyway, they're bummed because they and like basically everyone down their street are about to get their homes foreclosed on so that this developer can swoop in and develop a country club. Yeah. Now,
which supposedly Mikey's dad was going to fix it all, like for everyone or just for their family. I didn't get.
There's a lot of this movie that just doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't think they understood how foreclosures worked. Yeah. So they're all losing their houses.
Dad's business.
They're all lower middle income, we can't quite tell. But
they like have a view of the ocean. So
yeah, they're right on the pier. So anyway,
they probably got in when it was not so expensive and now their properties, so they should have made a ton of money.
A recurring theme of this movie is just go with it.
Sorry, I forgot.
The person who's trying to add levity to the situation is apparently kind of Mikey's best friend, although not really a best friend. It's just a jerk is Corey Feldman. He plays this character named Mouth and he's just...
His name's Mouth for a reason. Who's the guy in Leave It to Beaver, Wally's friend?
Eddie Haskell.
He's Eddie Haskell.
He's basically Eddie Haskell, except eminently more punchable and should be. Like, I did not like him at all in this movie. He's one of these big talker morons who's just like a waste of space. Anyway.
You're so harsh. He's 13.
Oh,
He's losing his home.
Yeah.
This isn't good.
We meet the other two Goonies. All four of the main Goonies are about eighth grade. One of them is Data, who's played by Jonathan K. Kwan. He was known to everybody who was alive at that point watching movies as Short Round. This is literally his second movie. His first movie was Short Round in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and this is the second movie. And he is just a stereotypical Asian kid with a heavy accent, and he's obsessed with basically turning himself into Inspector Gadget.
007.
Yeah, so much more.
It's a 007 like soundtrack that he plays.
He's very much just Inspector Gadget. It's like the level of gadgets he's got.
But he wants to be 007.
Right, right. So.
But he is Inspector Gadget.
So, yeah, he's just he's like trying to create these really pathetic spy gadgets, and
he's
then
13.
Anyway, so, and then we meet Chunk. Who's played by Jeff Cohen, who is this clumsy, chubby Jewish kid who has a, I believe it's penchant. Is that how you say that?
Penchant.
For lying, eating, and being the butt of every joke. He's just kind of like.
He also breaks everything.
Yeah, he's the squeak of this gang. And at first I was like, am I annoyed by this kid? And then I'm like, he is the best actor in the movie. Okay, so they're passing time and they're morons. And so they go up into the attic.
They're 13!
There's different levels of 13. And they...
you're real negative Nancy right now.
Mikey's dad is basically some sort of academic or...
I thought he was a curator for a museum.
Yeah, I think curator. And so they had this event for Astoria. And so all the extra stuff that wasn't put in the exhibit is up in the attic.
Rejects.
So they're in the midst of the attic playing with the stuff. And they come across... this old treasure map for a lost treasure that One-Eyed Willie, a pirate who evidently was run aground in 1632 in this big fight because he'd stolen all this stuff and got trapped into this cave. He created all these booby traps, killed all his crew so no one would know where the treasure is. And so for hundreds of years, people of this town have like tried to find this treasure. They see this as a chance to save their homes from these greedy developers. Brandon, the teenage brother who's kind of got a mind to these guys, is like, no, we're not doing this.
Well, because the mom said that Mikey was not allowed to leave the house because he has asthma and they live in a precipitous climate.
The kids, they basically overwhelm Brandon and kind of tie him up in his fitness equipment in a way that doesn't work, but okay. And then they take off. As they're leaving, Mouth undoes the tires for Brandon's bike. And so he's not going to be able to follow them. After a little while, the mom comes home and they get Brandon out of the home alone trap he's in and says, you better find your brother. So he races out, goes to the bike. Ah, my tires are, he says slashed, but the pressure's just out of it. And so there's this poor little girl with a little bike with training wheels. And so he pushes her out of the way to take the bike and says sorry and takes off on this pink bike, which is way too small for him in training wheels. Just because that wasn't ridiculous enough as he's like going around the road. And again, we're in Astoria, Oregon. So there's roads are windy and in forests and so on and so forth.
And wet.
A car pulls up next to him, which has the cheerleader Andy, the girl that he's really smitten with, her best friend Steph, played by Martha Plimpton, driven by this jerk who's a rival of his, and his dad is the one who's buying up the houses to the country club. So to be a jerk, Troy grabs onto Brandon's arm and then starts speeding. So like the training wheel, he goes so fast, the training wheels start to come off. It doesn't work like that, but whatever, pushes him off, kind of gets him going in a way, and like, let's go. So he like flies off of the road.
He's on like a baby bike.
Yeah. We don't have the Wile E. Coyote or Goofy like, woo, 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 you know. Yeah. The Goonies have been following the map and they figure out this map is pointing to the spot, which is an old abandoned restaurant. Small problem. This place is actually being used as a hideout by the Fratellis, by the criminals at the very beginning. Basically what happens is that the Fratellis have killed a few people. So as they're leaving with one of the dead bodies, the kids basically break in. Brandon catches up with the two girls. No, Troy.
Well, Troy was trying to look down her shirt with the mirror.
Yeah.
So she got out of the car.
Which I would support. I mean, he was looking up her skirt, but, you know, again, continuity, not a thing in this movie.
Well, that's what she said.
Yeah, and I believe her. You know, I believe women. So what ends up happening is, so they found Brandon, who was off a cliff somewhere. They just happened to find this restaurant, which makes no way that they would be able to find that. There's no map. There's nothing to let them know where to go. But hey, they all catch up at the exact right time. So they... amazing how that worked. Essentially, they find a tunnel that's underneath the fireplace in the basement. The Fratellis come back, so they got to race into this tunnel. Chunk is kind of late to trying to get in there, and so it's too late for him to get down the tunnel. So they say, okay, you go get the police. We're going to get out of this way with the tunnel because the Fratellis are bad news. We know they're bad news because there's an absolutely fresh newspaper with the Fratellis on it explaining how they're on the run. So Chunk has to take off to try to get the police. So he gets to the road and is trying to flag someone down. And who does he flag down? He flags down the Fratellis. So as the Goonies, you know, our heroes are kind of going through these tunnels trying to figure this stuff out. Chunk is, it's loose to say, being interrogated by the Fratellis in one of my favorite scenes of the whole movie. They're like, we want to know everything. And Chunk's like, oh man, okay. And he goes through a litany of every bad thing he's done in his life.
It's like confession time.
It's like, and he's crying as he's doing it. And he goes through cutscenes. And by the time we get to the final cutscene,
he glued his uncle's toupee to his face in the Hebrew school play.
Yeah, to play Moses. By the last cutscene, as he's confessing about how he did this vomit practical joke in a movie theater, Jake Fratelli wants to adopt him. And they figure out he actually was telling the truth. So he explains the treasure, he explains the tunnel and everything. So to keep him occupied, because he's seen him with a dead body, they chain him up in a room with the third Fratelli brother named Sloth. And he is like this 6'4", huge, deformed, giant of a man with kind of the mind of a kid. Chunk is able to befriend Sloth, and Sloth...
over a candy bar.
Yeah, Sloth breaks them out. So Chunk calls the police real quick.
The sheriff, but the sheriff doesn't believe him because he's a liar.
Yeah, then he and Sloth take off in the tunnels as well. Basically what happens is there's a series of traps that the Goonies have to get through, and the Fratellis kind of catch up to them and then kind of fall behind and catch up to them and fall behind. And eventually the Goonies solve a puzzle. They end up going down.
They solve a bunch of puzzles.
Yeah, they solve a bunch of puzzles, and then they go down this really incredible water slides.
I really liked how each Goonie brought something to the table in order to solve all the puzzles. Andy knew how to play the piano, and Mouth knew Spanish, mm-hmm. and Mikey was good at map navigation, so they all kind of like brought something. Chunk is literally used as a tool
mm-hmm. to break down something.
Because he breaks everything, because he's a klutz.
So we get down these incredibly intact water slides. We go through this. And
nice
then
and clean Disneyland. Yes, beautiful. I can smell the chlorine.
And they go down and they end up in this huge pool of water. And they turn around and here, dun, 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 is the Inferno. Is this beautifully intact, meticulously taken care of pirate ship. It is so Disneyland. I kept waiting for the pirate to be chasing the girls and the one girl to be chasing the pirate. Oh, I know. For the kids, it really was like Disneyland. Richard Donner didn't show the kids anything before it was time to start filming. They're showing up. It's like,
what is
going to happen? Water slides? Like, oh my gosh, a big boulder's going to fall? You know, so it must have been the best to film, to be a Goonie to film that.
I wish.
And so one of the big reveals, which he really made sure they couldn't see at all, was the big ship, because he wanted to get the organic reaction of mm-hmm. the kids turning around and seeing the ship.
But actually, mm-hmm. the take that made it into the movie was the second take, because they were so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So they had to do it again.
And one, when I went back to research this, one of the urban legends is because Josh Brolin cursed when he saw it, so they couldn't use the take.
I think I read that too. Yeah.
Which doesn't necessarily make sense.
No, because you can cut that out.
But it makes Josh Brolin sound cooler. So, you know. They find the ship. It's there. They get in there. There's all this gold and jewels. So they start just grabbing as much stuff as they can so they can get it and take off before the Fratellis show up. Small problem. The Fratellis show up while they're grabbing all this stuff. All hope seems lost, and they've given up all the treasure, and they're going to be sent to walk the plank while they have, you know, their arms bound so they won't be able to swim. Sloth and Chunk show up to save the day.
Errol Flynn style.
Sloth does the let me use a sword off the top of the sail to go down. Again, how did they get up there? It makes no sense. Anyway.
Hey, you guys.
And he comes down. We have this, what loosely may be considered a fight, where they're like missing each other by like feet and acting like they got hit. And it's just like, so it's like the Goonies versus Fratellis kind of in Sloth. Basically, as the Fratellis are gathering even more gold, they trip the last booby trap. And so there starts to become a cave-in.
Because they get greedy and they try to take Lily's gold.
Exactly. What happened earlier is the kids were grabbing the gold. There was some gold directly in front of One-Eyed Willie.
On and like a
On a scale. And so Mikey said, no, don't take that gold. That's Willie's gold. So they didn't. And then the Fratellis are just grabbing as much gold as they can. So they take the scale and they start this huge cave-in. So Sloth helps them, the Goonies, to escape. And we're not quite sure what happens. And so as this is happening, as the cave is kind of falling in, the kids kind of emerge from it. And they're all bummed because they're like, we did it. We could have saved everything. And the police and parents are waiting for them. And they're so glad they're okay. And they explain that, hey, we found the treasure, but they had to abandon it. Then the Fratellis emerge and are immediately arrested, except they stand up for Sloth, and so Sloth isn't arrested. Just as the father is about to sign the documents to lose his house, again, they don't understand how foreclosures work, the Goonies realize Mikey had put a bunch of jewels in his marbles pouch.
Goodbye, marbles.
Yeah, which was full of rare, although incredibly fake-looking jewels. That evidently is enough money to save the docks, and everything appears to be great. Everybody's for the Goonies. Happy. Everyone's happy. And just as this happens, we kind of figure out for reals, that's what's happened is that One-Eyed Willie's final booby trap wasn't just a cave-in, but a cave-in in a way that it would allow the ship to drift free. So
why didn't he just drift free in 1632?
Well, or like 1635, like once they weren't patrolling anymore. So the crowd just kind of stands in awe.
Chris Columbus wrote this film, Keith.
I got some stuff to say about that. So we end with the crowd staring at this departing ship as Mikey says thank you to the pirate One-Eyed Willie, who he considers the original Goonie.
Aww.
And that's the end of the movie. So there were good things about the movie. I realized that there were some of these things that I didn't like about it, but the casting of most of the main cast is just amazing, especially because many of the actors are still relatively young. Mm-hmm. So again, so this is Sean Astin, who I think he did a really good job in this part.
Well, our daughter is a big fan of him because he does a story in Storyline Online.
Yep.
And she watches it every day.
There
it's
you
about
go.
Lima beans.
Exactly.
We might be able to get her to eat lima beans because of this Sean Astin.
I think it's a long shot, but if anybody can do it, Sean Astin can.
Come on,
so,
Sean Astin.
Yeah, so like the four Goonies, I mean, I can't stand Corey Feldman. He's just a jerk.
He's everything you don't like.
Well, what's so funny about it is it's like, especially if you're listening to this after our review of Basketball, there is no sweetness between the kids, but like it's kind of imagined that there is, that there's some sort of, and like in Basketball,
like we all put it in there because we feel like there must be.
Yeah. But guys' relationships and friendships, they often are like how they are in Basketball or Goonies, where it's like from the outside, it's like, are you sure you're friends? But the actors were great. I didn't mention like Martha Plimpton. She doesn't really figure directly into the
amazing plot,
but she's really funny. Cary Grant, who plays Andy, she does a good job. Josh Brolin, Data, Jonathan K. Kwan.
He was my favorite character.
And I thought, and my favorite was Chunk. Like at first I was like, okay, he's just going to be annoying comic relief, but It's like, okay, this is funny. So, I mean, so the casting's amazing. So obviously Richard Donner and Steven Spielberg had a big role in that, but I just wanted to say Jane Feinberg, Mike Fenton, and Janet Taylor are the casting directors credited, and they did a great job. The unsung hero of the whole movie, though, was Michael Kahn, the editor. He completely deserved an Oscar for what he did, especially because Richard Donner was using people who were new to features and, you know, relatively young, like kind of their first roles. So he allowed for a lot of improvisations. He would do what's known as side coaching while scenes were happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then the camera was just running. So with side coaching, you don't normally do that on film. But
no,
what,
you did that in a class.
Yeah, you do it in a classroom. But again, you're making a major
but
motion
he's
picture and you need
teaching
to get
them.
Yeah, evidently what happened was is they just turned over the film to the editor, and the editor's like, what the heck
here,
am I supposed to do
out
with this? Yeah,
hours you got and hours of footage.
Of improvisation and like takes you want to use, except he's side coaching in the middle of it. So can I
cut around
can
that?
I clip that audio?
Oh my
can
gosh.
I do? So for that process, he definitely deserves an Oscar for that. That's amazing. You know, and the good thing, like you said, is it's like kind of like it's a movie that's impossible to watch and not feel young again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's totally like it's an adventure made up by three 10-year-olds who are hopped up on Pez and Mountain Dew. Like what would be the ultimate movie?
You
know, there's so much Scooby in this. Literally the Fratellis could have been
rip their face
Scooby
off
villains. Yeah. Yeah, and you've got like
they would have gotten away with it.
Like
too.
Josh Brolin is Fred. You've got Andy who's Daphne. You have Steph.
Oh, Steph is totally Veronica.
Well, Velma.
Velma,
yeah.
Sorry.
Since you've seen it, so
I
much
haven't time seen it.
Then the Goonies are like Scooby Doo and Shaggy, like all
and
of them
Scrappy
together. I guess Data is Dino Mutt.
What's a Dino Mutt?
What?
I saw like 2 episodes. I had horrific nightmares. Then I wasn't allowed to watch them anymore.
So Dino-Mutt is basically also a Great Dane, but he's a robot Great Dane.
Oh, you know what? I don't want to know.
And so he's like Inspector Gadget okay. with like stuff. And he's like so the sidekick of Blue Falcon. Like, that's what I said. I said okay. Dino-Mutt is Data.
I didn't hear that. I didn't know what you're talking about. So it didn't resonate with me.
So the bad thing I felt like in the movie uh-huh. is it felt like it was written by 3 10-year-olds who were hopped up on Pez and Mountain Dew. Like, they wrote the movie that they'd like to write. The very little I know about screenwriting for movies is, like, often they'll have beats on cards. You'll have, like, story things like, oh, I want this scene. Mm-hmm. I want this beat to happen. And you have the cards and you kind of put it on. You have your movie in front of you and then you write the movie according to that skeleton. And it very much felt to me like this is this bit. Like, it was a collection of moments, like, of childhood recollections instead mm-hmm. of, like, a coherent story. And one of the big issues, one of the
I'm
reasons.
I'm not mad at that.
One of the reasons for like the jumping back and forth is that from what I've read, Steven Spielberg was learning how to be an executive producer. Spielberg is like, I got this idea for a story and got to Chris Columbus and said, hey, I want you to write this movie. Richard Donner is going to direct it. And then Spielberg, I guess, never left.
I feel like Richard Donner, after watching the making of is and hearing what you're saying, is a very long suffering, patient man.
Yeah, I think so. Like, and everything I've read says that. It kind of makes sense that the script is uneven. There aren't plot holes. There are like deep, treacherous caverns. I know so little about linguistics, but one of the things that annoyed me to no end is when Feldman was translating the map from Spanish. So evidently this 13-year-old who's just taken a few classes in Spanish can read Spanish, which is hundreds of years old, and it rhymes.
The intruders beware.
If something is in English rhymes,
it wouldn't rhyme.
it would take so much work in one language to translate it to another. And is it possible? Of course it is. A 13-year-old doing that on the fly, like that'd be like linguistics genius stuff.
Yes.
And they establish very clearly he is not a genius in any shape or form. I totally realize there are tons of unrealistic parts of movies. None of Data's inventions should in any way work. There's this running gag with this like go-go gadget, you know, those chattering teeth
Pinches
sets.
Pinches of peril.
Yeah. So there's like this, you know, the chattering teeth joke. So they're like, oh, we put it at the end of a slinky and we can shoot it up 3 stories and it automatically attaches itself to a cavern in a way that would stop a 120-pound boy from dying on spikes by just a couple inches. The oil slick.
A slick shoes, Keith.
Slick shoes. It looked horrible. It didn't make sense. And so that's like some of the inconsistencies of it. And there's a lot of very sweet parts of this movie, like behind the scenes. Like the kids evidently did become really close and friends.
And they had so much fun.
And they clearly had so much fun. There was a very Cyndi Lauper music video that was shot six months after.
We have to talk about the Cyndi Lauper music
video. Oh my gosh. So
this is like, you're right in your wheelhouse.
Cyndi Lauper was huge at the beginning of making pro wrestling mainstream in the 80s. Vince McMahon loves it because he's trying to get pro wrestling on a main stage. And Cyndi Lauper and MTV is the best way to do it. If you like pro wrestling in the 80s, if you like heels in the 80s, you have a wonderful star-studded cast.
In this music video.
In this music video, which is basically a recreation of the Goonies movie.
But with wrestlers.
All at once. And so Cyndi Lauper's family is losing their gas station. And her father is Captain Lou Albano again. And her actual mom is playing her mom. Mm-hmm. And so a truck pulls up with the Fabulous Moolah, Rowdy Roddy Piper, Nikolai Volkoff, the Iron Sheik, and Classy Freddie Blassie, who are all like big wrestling heels at the time.
And heel's a bad guy.
Heel's a bad guy. And so Cyndi Lauper has to...
She finds a hole in the wall.
She finds a hole in the wall and like goes in it and finds a map. And it was a 2-part music video. It was
two parts.
It was a big thing on MTV. And basically the cast from Goonies, except for Carrie Green, the cheerleader character, like mm-hmm. reunite to be in this music video.
And Bangles with Susanna Hoffs. Mm-hmm. I was like, is that Susanna Hoffs playing a pirate?
Yeah.
The Bangles were in it too.
Yeah. So you've got like, I am shocked that Hulk Hogan wasn't a part of this somehow.
Yeah, where was he?
So anyway, so they have this 2-part music video, and it's the song Good Enough, which is a great song.
Goonies are good enough.
Yeah, so Goonies Are Good Enough is what.
Which has nothing to do with the Goonies whatsoever, if you look at the lyrics.
Not really.
But it's a catchy tune.
Yeah, and so at the very end, Andre the Giant shows up.
Can I say the revelation that I had watching Andre the Giant?
What was your revelation?
That Andre the Giant looks like a puffier version of Dietrich Bader.
I did not think of that before, but you are absolutely correct.
And
that,
which Dietrich Bader played a wrestler in Napoleon Dynamite? No one was a roundhouse kick to the face in these Zumba pants.
He was a sensei.
Oh, that's right.
So you want to hear what I think of the movie?
Oh, what did you think?
Well, what do you think my reaction's going to be?
Well, you were very indignant and offended earlier. So I don't know.
I love the ideas of the Goonies. Probably my biggest issue is that I saw the movie too late. Like, I think if I had seen the movie.
You missed the window.
Yeah, and it also would have been, just with my upbringing, it would have been tough for me to see this movie because so much of what the kids do is exactly how my mom didn't want me to act. And so I think probably my big issue with this is by the time I'd seen the movie, I tried to watch it somewhere in my late teens.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like...
Well, because all the problems that you have with this movie, I'm like, mm-hmm, so...
I think if I had watched it when I was younger, I think I would have painted over. And I realize I'm really setting myself up badly for Toy Soldiers because I know that that has a lot of unrealistic parts to it. Part of me is like, yes, this is a thumbs down movie. I love the idea of the movie. I loved some of the performances. For his age, I thought Sean Astin did a good job. You know,
being the lead.
I liked Josh Brolin, but when he started to have his comeback, I was like, who? I wasn't quite sure because I hadn't seen Goonies, and so I didn't. So,
that's where I know him from.
Yeah. So, like, when he started to have his comeback with, like, No Country for Old Men and stuff like that, I was like, okay, cool. You know, yeah, he's a good actor. It's like Matt Dillon. Matt Dillon can wait, like, 10, 15 years, and people are like, oh, yeah, I know you're a star.
And then hop back in.
Yeah. You can be like, I think I feel like. I just feel like making a few million dollars for a few months' work, and then I'm just going to go back to whatever I want to do, you know? So, like, there's some people who...
Racing Stallions.
Yeah, so I think he was...
I don't know if that's what he does. That's what I picture.
I can't... wow. Do you need a moment? Would you like a fan for a little bit?
Oh, I'm a little hot.
Yeah, so looking a little flush there. So...
like Tina.
Was he on Jericho? I was about to say, is he on Jericho? There is he on. Anyway, I can't give it a thumbs up on the other hand, but I can give it a thumb in the middle because I'm like,
I will take that.
There's too many plot holes. This was a great draft of the movie. They keep trying to figure out how to make a sequel.
I can't be objective, so.
Yeah, no, and there's movies that I can't either, so yeah. I understand. So I can see people flipping tables now and throwing things at me. I apologize. I like the idea of Goonies. The movie itself, it just didn't quite make it for me.
Well,
so.
I think you just missed that boat.
So
you are not indoctrinated with the baggage.
That's true. Sometimes when you see something young, it's like, boom.
Martika did not write Toy Soldiers about the movie. It's actually about drug addiction, and it came out in 1988.
Yeah, I looked it up too, and I was like, dang it.
So as we were watching this movie, I was thinking, is this like Wolverines?
No, it's
what is
not.
It? Wolverines, come out and play.
No, you're, okay. So.
What? It's like the Wolverines.
It is similar to the movie Red Dawn.
Okay.
And Red Dawn, they... called them the teenagers who are fighting against the, I can't remember, Russians, I think, the Russians who came up. So they call themselves the Wolverines. Like, it's like their high school mascot. And so they're like, Wolverines. And so that's like Toy Soldiers. Toy Soldiers is close to the movie Red Dawn,
okay,
which
so
is about teenagers who...
Because I was waiting for the Russians
basically
to
fight,
show up.
Yeah. So, and then there's another movie called The Warriors, which is kind of like a... future dystopian kind of gang warish type battles where there's different gangs fighting each other.
Uh-huh.
And in that movie,
that's a separate movie.
And in that movie, there's a moment where I believe it's the bad guys who are like, warriors, come out and play.
Oh, see, now I thought that the Wolverines, that was like the call to battle. Like, Wolverines, come out to play.
No, it was a bad guy taunting.
Oh, okay.
You know, a bad gang taunting the warriors.
You know, I can't keep up with all of these kid soldier movies. So I suppose you want to tell me how this movie held up for you.
It was great. Usually we say, like, there are movies like that movie's not made for me. Like, this movie is made for me. They said, all right, who's the target audience for this movie? It would be Keith in San Diego.
Would you like to hear my pitch for this movie?
I am always scared at this moment, but yes, I would like
I
to
think
hear.
I did a really good job. When a boys' prep school is taken hostage by terrorists, a group of troublemakers band together to take the operation down from the inside. So we start off in Barranquilla, Colombia. So there's this guy, his name's Luis Cali. He's played by Andrew Dyvoff, which I, when we were watching it, I was like, oh, the Latino Josh Brolin.
That is a good call.
Thank you.
I didn't think of that, but yes, that's a very good call.
I think this is my new thing that I do, is I, you know, like Dietrich Bader is Andre the Giant.
Okay.
Anyway, he has taken a courthouse hostage in order to get his drug boss dad out of prison. After shoving this poor woman out of a third-story window, he learns that his dad has actually already been extradited to the U.S. So he and his crew, which consist of an American, the bad guy from Total Recall, wearing the same costume, takes off in a helicopter. So then we cut to the Regis School, which is a prep school for boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's a prep school for boys that have been expelled from other prep schools. So we have Billy Tepper, played by Sean Astin, and he is a mischief maker and the leader of his band of friends, one of which is Joey Trotta, played by Will Wheaton. Giles Montoya Bradbury, played by Keith Coogan. Now that's what I'm used to seeing Keith Coogan as.
What was his full name again?
I didn't say his full name because they called each other by their last names.
So yeah, because I was stuck on like Montoya. You said like...
Yeah, we have Giles, Montoya, and Bradbury.
Yeah, no, it was just the way it was. It
sounded, Montoya Bradbury?
Yeah, it sounded like Giles Montoya Bradbury, played by Keith Coogan. I'm like, wait...
So Keith Coogan played Bradbury, mm-hmm. and he's, you know, asthmatic and worried about everything. Asthmatic, yet really wants to smoke cigarettes. Well, that's what's good for your asthma.
He's a rebel.
Okay. And Phil Donahue.
I don't think his name was Phil Donahue.
His name was Phil Donahue.
Wow. So we have this band of five. We're going to strive to survive. So.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to take over. Phil Donahue.
Mm-hmm.
Whose father just so happens to be the judge that will be presiding over Callie's father's trial. So Phil is removed from the school, and he is taken to an undisclosed location to be safe. Later on a night of fun consisting of talking to a phone sex operator and drinking mouthwash.
Actually, vodka.
And peppermint schnapps and creme de menthe. We establish three things.
Mm-hmm.
We establish that A... there is a secret sub-basement under the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Two, that Tepper is ingenious with gadgets.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, that these boys don't care about getting kicked out of school and are up for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Which all of these things will be important later. Dean Parker, played by Iron Eagle Lou.
Mm-hmm.
Lou Gossett Jr.
So good in this movie. So good.
Catches them in the act, mm-hmm. and it becomes clear by his chuckles that he is amused and a little impressed by Tepper's chops. He makes it clear, though, that he's not going to kick Tepper out of school because he's been kicked out of three other schools, and that didn't help him. Instead, he's going to keep him at Regis until he graduates, no matter how many years it takes. Oh, and in the meantime, he's going to be on pots and pans duty.
Pots and pans.
And I was really confused about, there's a couple things that happen. Like, he doesn't get mad at him, and he doesn't expel him, and Tepper, to get back at them, they remove all of the headmaster's furniture mm-hmm. from his office and set it up exactly in the same, on the quad.
Mm-hmm.
And they try really hard not to laugh.
Are you going
to
mention who this headmaster is who's in charge of the school?
What was he in? What else was he in?
Oh my God, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, I didn't see that.
He's, what?
I told you I didn't see Indiana Jones.
What?
I saw the last one with Sean Connery and River Phoenix.
Ah. Okay, we're watching Raiders of the Lost Ark.
What's that one, The Temple of...
The Last Crusade.
Okay, so it's Denham Elliott.
Yes.
Yes. And
who's just perfect in this role.
He was quite lovely.
He was amazing.
I enjoyed him.
Yeah. I mean, he's playing the same guy as he was, basically, in Raiders of the Lost Ark and Last Crusade. So
that's another connection.
Mm-hmm.
Because Short Round.
Yep.
Anyway, so the next day after Dean Parker leaves on an errand, Holly and his crew storm the school looking for Phil Donahue, not the talk show host.
No.
The child.
Yes, yes. Louis Gossett Jr. has to take all the liquor back into town from the mouthwash.
To the sheriff.
Because also, Tepper has vandalized the sheriff's squad car. And so Louis Gossett Jr. is bribing, is basically bribing the sheriff
because
not to do anything.
Who works at the liquor store and gave all the liquor to this child?
Yep, the sheriff's brother. So,
small town.
Yep.
When the terrorists first show up in the lunchroom with the guns and everyone's like, what's going on? Like, I was just like, ooh, you can't make this movie anymore. Yep. It was so, like, it was disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. You know,
it made me go, oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of puts you in a place of kids who are in the midst of school shootings. So, yeah.
See, now I'm crying. Okay, let's move on.
Okay.
So, anyway. Whew. Callie is enraged that he has just missed Phil Donahue. Again, not the talk show host.
Yes.
But realizes that they don't need him.
Because they got Jenny Jones.
Have Jenny Jones, Ricky Lake, Maury Povich, Jerry Springer.
And Montel Williams.
And Arsenio Hall.
Exactly.
There was the Arsenio Hall move, that's why.
Oh, yeah, at the very end. that did not age well.
So he doesn't need Phil Donahue because he has a whole school full of sons of wealthy, influential figures. Not to mention a mafia boss, the state representative, the vice chairman of the Republican Party, and the owner of the third largest construction company in the U.S.
Yeah, like I said, he's a contractor. That's Billy Tepper's dad,
who he could care less about.
Hmm.
So, new plan, he's going to take the whole school hostage.
And to get his father back.
So, the boys are redistributed into dorm rooms and are allowed to move freely. Except for hourly headcounts. And if anyone is missing during a headcount, executions will ensue. So, there would be 5 executions for every 1 missing person. So they wrap the school up in miles and miles of wires connected to a bomb in the headmaster's office where Callie has kind of set up shop. And again, I always wonder about the Radio Shack budget. I mean, that was a lot of wire.
It was.
Jeez. So the detonator / garage door opener is attached to Callie's wrist at all times. And so they spend a lot of the day just, like, outside, like, playing Frisbee. I just thought it was weird that the boys were, like, laughing and playing like it was P.E. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't sure who directed the background extras there. But, yeah.
So the town sheriff tries to intervene against the advice of Dean Parker. Dean Parker's like, no, you need to call the FBI and the National Guard. These guys are serious. And he's greeted with his car being bazooka'd.
Yeah, he says, like, hey, this is the sheriff. And I'm serious. I'm just coming to talk. Do not fire on this car.
Bazooka. So then the officials are called and they set up a command post. Callie sends all the adults out except for the kitchen staff and the headmaster. FYI, Tepper is still on pots and pans. Meanwhile, the wealthy parents have ascended on the town and they try to bully the FBI into negotiating with terrorists, which they don't normally do.
Which is one of the most unrealistic parts of the movie, is that the FBI acts like they have power against the vice president of the Republican committee and all these other rich people. Right. So
Callie has been on the phone with the Smuckers guy, RIP 2005.
Yeah, who's the basically the FBI task force person in charge.
Oh, I'm glad that you paid attention because I was like, I don't know who any of these people are.
Yes.
And so he's trying to get his demands met. So Billy and his crew use this time to covertly gather intel, sketch portraits of the terrorists, and come up with a plan to take the operation down from the inside. Which Billy sets up an elaborate escape to get info back to the authorities, but he has to get back in time for the next headcount. So it's very stressful. So the authorities, because they try to detain him, and he's trying to explain that he needs to go back, otherwise 5 people are going to be executed. And so he appeals to Dean Parker, who seems to have a lot of pull around this operation.
Yeah, another unrealistic part of it.
I was like, is he retired military? Is that why?
Well, it was, yeah, it was like kind of like when they're talking to the parents.
He was an Iron Eagle, so.
Yeah, he's kind of like seen as an equal of like, yes. And he's very, very cool and very intelligent, yes. And very well played by Louis Gossett
Jr. Oh, God, yeah. He did such a good job.
Yeah, best possible person for that role. He is kind of a consultant, but he seems to be very free with his opinion.
Yes, and they listen to him.
Yeah.
Billy just yanks down one of the sides of the tent, and the tent falls on them. And, oh, we can't do anything because the tent fell on us. So then he jumps in a Hummer. He's got to get there because it's like time. Mm-hmm. And so he takes the Hummer and crashes it into a lake, and then goes back to the school. And at this point, he's all wet because he's been in a drainage pipe. He's a couple minutes late. He shows up. He strips all of his clothes off, and he has this towel that he brought with him.
So the towel was used for two reasons. Number one, to break the window,
right.
So he could get in and unlock the door. Mm-hmm. And then also to leave the building and sneak back in, he had the towel to keep the window from shutting all the way down.
So he shows up in his towel and says, oh, sorry, I was in the shower in here. So nobody gets executed. So then the FBI and the military, including R. Lee Ermey, who... I had never up until this point seen his name written out. I mm-hmm. always thought his name was Arlie.
Like
A-R-L-Y.
Yeah, I always thought it was A-R-L-E-E.
So the FBI military, they've been given the authorization to make a deal with the terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
But they feel like they can pull off Billy's plan. And I was like, there is no way on God's green earth that they would, if they had a chance to make a deal... just be like, yeah, we'll just let the kids do it.
So the military guys were like really impressed by the intel. And then number two, they were, oh my God, I think this might actually work. And so they asked Gossett's like, do you trust what this guy has to say? And
these kids.
Gossett's like, well, yeah, I do. But it was clear that they couldn't guarantee success. And so
yeah.
The FBI guy is like, comes in and says, we're going to negotiate. And they're like, well, wait a second. You know, maybe because, again, the military would be focused on mm-hmm. like if there's a way for us to do it, we need to do it. And the FBI guy is like, look, is there any way you can guarantee no casualties? And they're like, well, no. And they're like, yeah, OK, we're negotiating.
So did they just do it under Smucker's nose then?
Wow. Okay. We were kind of asleep for about 10 or 15 minutes then. So it'll be interesting to see where this plot goes. So
they end up going with it.
Well, he
even though they were going to negotiate.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay.
What?
Let's see what you're going to skip to. Because yeah, we're missing a, we'll see if you bring it back around.
So Joey Trotta's dad, who mm-hmm. is the Dirty Dancing dad.
Jerry Orbach. Yeah.
Jerry Orbach. He's a New Jersey mafia boss. He calls in a favor to Callie's father in prison to release his son. And Callie does it because he respects Joey's father. And he would be a really great friend, quote unquote, to have. So Joey is told that he's being released, but he refuses to leave his friends in this pickle.
Mm-hmm.
And so he attacks the guard that is leading him out of the building,
mm-hmm.
grabs his gun. Unfortunately, he gets about 5 feet before he's gunned down. Oops. Mm-hmm. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Now they don't have a friend anymore. Will Wheaton is dead. Did I bring it back or no?
I don't know. That's a part of it, but this is the next step.
Okay. Oh, I know what you're talking about. I'm going to bring it back around.
Okay.
Gosh. Don't trust me. I'm telling a story here.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I don't know why they went with the kids thing. The best part of the script. I don't understand how they finally justify that in a credible way. Oh, okay. Oops.
So Dean Parker uh-huh. is sent in to recover the body.
Mm-hmm.
And Callie stresses, and boy is he stressed, mm-hmm. that he explains that Joey's execution was an accident, and they totally didn't mean to. Trotta shows him by putting a hit out on Callie's father in prison, and the authorities cut all communication and power to the school because they're afraid of what Callie's going to do when he finds out that his dad's been murdered. Is that why?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So what the whole purpose of this is to get his father back. So if his father is gone, then they're afraid that he's just going to blow up the whole school in retaliation.
Right.
So that's why they're going to go for it, because they know.
I knew that. You made me feel like I missed a chunk of the movie.
Well, because you said.
I'm telling a story here.
It's like, I don't know why they went with the kids plan.
But that's my point. It's like, okay. Well, I didn't. Even then, I did it. I don't know. Okay. They give the boys the signal to mm-hmm. go ahead with the plan. But Billy is traumatized because Joey's just been gunned down in front of him, and he's lost all hope. And what's the point? And the group talks him into giving it a try in their tighties. I don't say tighty-whities because they weren't all white, but they were tight.
Yeah.
And it was quite uncomfortable, and I really couldn't take anyone seriously when they were standing there with no pants on.
I've never, like, understood. I mean, there are some guys who do that, just, like, in college and, like, hanging out with friends, and I'm just like, I just never.
Because it was a dorm room, but it wasn't their dorm room.
Well, and, like, I've lived in dorms. I've lived in a fraternity. It's like.
Is in Donald Duckett?
No, you don't Donald Duckett. You put on shorts.
You don't Porky Pigot?
Pants. Like, yeah. Although it did crack me up, because what makes it even more uncomfortable is this is in the dark days before the boxer briefs.
Yes.
So as a guy, it was it was like you had either boxers, or which briefs. Are uncomfortable, or briefs, which could be uncomfortable. So whoever, shout out to whoever invented boxer briefs, you have Hallelujah. Improved the world for the better.
So they proceed to swap out the chip in the bomb detonator receiver with a radio-controlled airplane's chip. Which is going to render the garage door opener useless.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you want to fly a radio-controlled plane. So they sneak attack the guards and lead all the hostages down into the secret sub-basement under the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Where they give the headmaster some mouthwash. And mm-hmm. his reaction is priceless. He's like, look at
clap! As is everyone's when they taste this horrendous alcohol concoction.
So from the outside, the authorities, they're all in, you know, helicopters because they know something that nobody inside knows. So they gun down the guards, and only Callie and a few men are left. And then all of a sudden, all of the hostages have disappeared. So Callie captures Billy, who for some reason is outside of the bunker. I don't know why he was outside of it. But
yeah, it was like, are you guarding the bunker? It's like, that's what.
Yeah, but then it's like, if you're standing near the bunker, they're going to know where it is, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think what you said was good. Is like, oh, so we can have this tense scene. That's why.
Yeah, that's what I said.
You're so smart. So he drags Billy into the headmaster's office, and more SWAT, like all of the SWAT, descend on the school in helicopters and rappelling. And Dean Parker has followed the first kind of SWAT teamers in. Something kind of goes wrong, a grenade goes off, and so they're all, you know, messed up. And so it's just him. So he crashes into the window of the headmaster to distract Callie long enough for the other SWAT teams to storm in. And, you know, Callie tries to set off the bomb, but instead turns on the radio-controlled airplane in the mm-hmm. office. And he's like, what? And then the SWAT team shoot him, and poor Dean gets shot in the shoulder. But he's okay. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Iron Eagle Lou is okay.
Yeah, they do a fake out, because he's clearly shot in his chest right where his heart is. And then later he's just like,
my shoulder.
My shoulder.
My arm.
Yeah, my arms. But, yeah, I love the beats to it, because you drag into it. He's like, crap, I'm done. So he hits the remote control. You know, the plane goes off. And so that's a funny moment. And then and Billy's laughing. And then
then his blood poured all over him.
The main bad guy's like, crap. So he tries to get over to pull out the wires from the bomb. And so Louis Gossett Jr. is just watching at first. And he calls down to the bomb guy. He's like, what happens if he pulls the wire? And he's like, the bomb goes off. Shoot him. And so.
Here's my gun.
Yeah. So Louis, he'd already been given the gun. So Louis Gossett was like, and just like dives through the window.
Yeah.
In a really stupid.
It's just a cacophony.
Yeah, and then it's a really good special effect on how the bad guy dies, which I won't spoil, but yes, a really good special effect.
I didn't understand why there wasn't, like, a gallon of blood on Billy, but whatever.
You know, the physics of it, I think, didn't necessitate he had to.
They didn't want this to be bloody, because a lot of people kind of get shot, and there should have been, like, a ton of blood, and there wasn't. So I think they were trying to go for a more clean...
Yeah, I think they showed at the end. Like, so once the bullet goes through... He's down on the ground, and then you start to see more blood. But it's not...
not that I want to see blood, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, that was one of the points of the filmmakers, is they were like, okay, they're like, they didn't want it to be a Rambo. So there's only there's like 17 or 18 people who die, which is still a lot, but...
Yeah. But like it wasn't a bloodbath.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, going back to kind of what we were saying, like so Billy apologizes to Dean Parker for being such a pill, and he gives him the old, like, noogie.
Yeah.
And he says, Dean tells him, wow, you really came through. You made it. But you're still on pots and pans duty.
Yeah, he asked to be off of pots and pans. He's like, oh, no, you aren't going to get off that easy. You know.
So the hostages are released, and that's where the Arsenio Hall thing happens. Julia Roberts does it in Pretty Woman.
Yeah, so it's kind of like shake the fist.
At the polo match.
Yeah, and then the...
Yeah, I think people know what that is.
Yeah, and then Raise the Roof happened about that time and was there for much longer.
Well, now we're up flossing, so let's kill ourselves.
Oh, no.
So they all run out onto the quad, and the friends are nervous because they can't see Billy. An ambulance drives by, and they try to, like, look in and see if it's Billy, and they're kind of stressing out. And then Billy comes running out of the building, and they all high-five.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that Montoya not only has a red shirt and a chain wallet, but he's got red socks.
Yeah, he's got...
Because he's cool.
Yeah, he's got the AC Slater starter kit.
Oh, my
is
God.
Kind of what is the outfit.
Yes!
So
that's exactly what I thought. So that is Iron
Toy
Eagle.
Soldiers.
Wolverines. I love how I just it was it's not called Wolverines.
No,
but
it's
I said
not.
Wolverines and you know what I was talking about.
I did. I did. I have been married to you for 10 years. So yes, I'm not completely fluent in Corey yet, but I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Wolverines. So you want to hear about what I liked?
Yeah.
I really love Louis Gossett Jr. Mm-hmm. in this movie. He is just such a lovely character.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, as I said, he and Denham Elliott, both, I thought, were sympathetic characters. At first, I didn't understand, like, what was going on, because normally if a kid in a prep school acts like that, then they're gone. But then to find out that, oh, gosh. To find out that this is, the last stop kind of prep school, they're taking not an authoritative approach. They're taking, a guiding and loving approach. It just made my heart happy.
Yeah, they call it restorative justice.
I was going to say, was it restorative circle or whatever? I really liked all of the boys. I thought all of the actors that were the boy group.
The boy band.
The boy band, the toy soldiers. I thought they did a really good job and they had really good chemistry. And they seemed to kind of how we're always now talking about the relationship of were they nice to each other? Did they treat each other well? They really did. They cared about each other. And
yeah, they still argue and make fun of each other.
Oh,
but it was much more
was way more we have a friendship and we respect each other. We love each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think
I don't want to cry every time.
Yeah, I think that's one of the underrated strengths of this movie. It's a really good picture for non-toxic masculinity.
How interesting that this is the movie that finally gets it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was very suspenseful. You a couple of times looked over at me and you're like, "You okay?"
Mm-hmm. Well, when Will Wheaton
passed,
I was like, "Ah, are you?"
I
heard a sniff and looked over.
It was the glorious earring.
Uh-huh.
The one thing that they never explain is why is there a white guy terrorist? Like, they never go into that.
He's like the number two.
In a tactile vest.
Yep, looking like he's a...
looking like from Total Recall when he was in a tactile vest.
Although I thought it was super hilarious. Like, so he's the number two. He's always backing up the boss, doing what he needs to do beforehand. You've got this bad guy who's killed people, no problem killing people. He's on the phone.
He's just a good people person.
Yeah, he's on the phone talking to the FBI guy.
Smuckers.
And they're like, okay, well, we'll negotiate tomorrow. And he looks over and Michael Champion, totally out of character, is totally doing being a PR rep. Gives him a thumbs up to hang up the phone for him. And it was just that just cracked me up. It's like, I've been in that position and never with terrorists. And it was so funny because it was just like, he's so mean.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time, and then it's like, oh, hey, I'm coaching.
Well, you know what, though? He always was he went and got the files, and he would look up the files. Keith Coogan's character has, to cause a distraction, has, an asthmatic attack, and so he goes and gets the file to make sure this kid has asthma.
And he didn't need to be asked.
Well, and it was his idea that, we don't need Phil Donahue because we got Ricky Lake. And
yeah, so he's the number two. So... Yes, in many ways. There's many good platonic male relationships in this movie.
Yes. Why a white guy?
Well, yeah.
It didn't make any sense. They didn't explain it, so that was weird.
Yeah.
The whole thing's pretty implausible, which I know I have no room to say, because I made you watch The Goonies, and I think there's no problem with that movie.
I was really afraid it was just going to be zero plausibility. And I think, in general, if you're going to write that story, they did it as plausibly as you
could. Well, and it's based on a novel.
Yeah, about a European prep school. I looked a little bit up on it.
Oh, European.
So
different rules.
Yeah, it was. They originally the book is set in Europe and it's Muslim terrorists.
It's nice that they went with a different type of terrorist.
I guess in a way. I mean, they very much Americanized the story, and I haven't read the novel, so I don't know how it diverges.
I don't feel like I need to read that. So do you want to hear my rating?
Yeah.
I've been having a really hard time with it. And I keep, like, thinking about other movies that I've rated, too. So I'm trying not to, like, it's like you try not to judge it based off of what you've already judged. But mm-hmm. then you, but, okay. So I'm just going to say it. So I'm going to have one thumb in the middle.
Oh, no.
Because, you know, this is not a movie that was made for me. Okay. It was fine. It wasn't like, oh, my gosh, you have to see this. This mm-hmm. movie was like, eh. So one thumb in the middle. And then another thumb that's in the middle, but it's toggling upward because of Louis Gossett Jr. and Denholm Elliott and Will Wheaton and all the performances.
That's cool.
And yeah. that, it, you know... It's not a movie for me.
I'm excited to hear you say that. And I think that's fair. It's much better than it has any right to be. Mm-hmm. Like, when I was reading, like, the old reviews of it and stuff, and people are just dogging the script, I'm like, I thought the script wasn't bad. Coming up with a reason that they have to go with the kids' plan made a ton of sense to me.
Yeah, I think that would be the only reason to come up with, to use the kids' plan.
Yeah, that's
because
the only one.
That point... There is nothing else that they could do.
Yeah, and he's just going to blow up. And
he's just going to kill everybody anyway.
Yeah. So putting the two movies together, it's like Goonies is the movie 10-year-olds hopped off on Pez would write mm-hmm. that they'd want to see. And I felt like Toy Soldiers is the movie that a professional writer would write for kids who are 10 hopped up on Pez and drinking Mountain Dew. Okay. So I thought that was... Well,
I guess we should probably wrap it up.
We should probably wrap it up and see what.
Are you okay? Uh-uh. Was that Pots and Pans?
No. Oh, okay.
Well, Keith, we did it again. We 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon'd something.
Oh, I thought we oopsed. Okay. So, yeah, it was cool to discover that Michael Caine edited both Toy Soldiers and The Goonies.
So I figured out that I am 1 degree away from Kevin Bacon. I was doing my dinner detective show, mm-hmm. and I was a damsel in distress, and I had this monologue where I had to stand in the middle of the room and you know, lament. I'm lamenting to the left side of the room. I'm lamenting to the right side of the room. I go to lament in front of me, and who is sitting 2 feet away from me but James Spader, who at the time was playing Robert California on The Office. Mm-hmm. And I stopped. It felt like about 2 minutes to me that I stopped and was thinking in my head, hey, that's James Spader. But it was probably like 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. He kind of looked at me like, mm-hmm. And so
why, yes, I am James Spader.
I kept going. And then I got murdered. So I got to go backstage. And I was like, wow, there's a guy in there who really looks like James Spader. And they were like, yeah, he's Elijah's dad. Elijah is one of the actors that we worked with. And I was like, well, he really looks like James Spader. And they're like, yeah, he is James Spader, yeah. Elijah Spader's dad. Oh, I wish someone would have told me. So then after the show, he hung out with us for a little bit and talked and, you know, because his son was in the cast with us. The thing that makes me angry is that I was trying to be professional. Like, I've mm-hmm. been trained that, you know, you're a professional. You don't ask for pictures and autographs. And so I didn't ask for one. Mm-hmm. And then later on Facebook, I saw one of my castmates had asked him mm-hmm. for a picture and mm-hmm. took a picture with him. And I was like, dang it! So James Spader was in a little movie called Diner with Kevin Bacon. 1 degree away with Kevin Bacon.
How is this connected to Toy Soldiers again?
I don't know.
We figured it out.
I just was thinking about Kevin Bacon. We realized we talked all about Good Boys, and we talked about how amazing they are, but uh-huh. we didn't tell you who they were, and we really should.
Yes, we should.
So the main little boy is Jacob Tremblay.
Is he the skinny ladies man who gets his heart broken all the time? Or
yeah,
is he
he's the main character.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's Keith Williams. He was in The Last Man on Earth.
Oh, so funny.
He actually talks in this one, though.
Nice.
Because Last Man on Earth, he doesn't talk.
Aw.
And then Brady Noon is the, you know, the singer? Musical theater.
The singer. He's got to perform.
He puts a bottle of beer in his pants and tries to act like it's his member in front of a cop at a convenience store. And the cop just wants to go home
because
he's been working, like, all night. And they're, like, freaked out and they're convinced that they're screwed. And, they basically confess to him, and he's like, oh my god, it's such a good movie. Please go see it.
Yeah, not with your kids.
No, maybe we should do for Christmas, we should do like movies, like as a gift, we could do like movies that we both like.
Oh, that might
And we could like talk
sense.
About you know, what we liked.
Uh-huh.
Both of us.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah, I think that would
we
work.
We should do that.
Yeah, we'll have to list that out.
Yeah. So anyway, mm-hmm. that's a...
But not next week.
Not next week at all.
No. Next week we are seeing a couple movies that we each love.
Well, so Keith really wanted to see his movie.
My movie is, as far as I know, the first independent comic book to make a successful blockbuster movie. Huh. It is the last role, unfortunately, played by Brandon Lee. And that movie, of course, is the incomparable The Crow.
So then I was like, oh, well, you know what I want you to watch, which would fit real well,
mm-hmm.
is Weekend at Bernie's. Because they're both about dead people.
There you go. So thank you, everyone, for who's listening to this. Please don't hate me, since I didn't love Goonies. I did see the charms in it, just not for me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you
he
can.
Missed the boat, you guys.
I did. I
He's
missed
older
the boat.
Than
it
me,
is.
So.
It is my yes.
He robbed the cradle, so
exactly. Not in a creepy way. No. So, but yeah.
No, we were well over 30 when he robbed my cradle.
Wow.
Oh gosh.
Wow.
So,
0 to 60.
Yeah. So, please, whatever you're listening to us on, if you could please rate us and subscribe, that would be real helpful.
Yeah, we're starting to get some really positive reviews. So, thank you so
much.
We
have listeners in Bulgaria.
Exactly. Thank you to our Bulgarian listeners. I was a bit surprised by that.
Yeah. And Germany, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the United Kingdom.
Yeah, it's we're international.
You're an international man of mystery.
Yeah, exactly. So
yes.
If you could go ahead and like and subscribe and review and
stars and
wherever
stripes.
You find us.
Yes.
Yeah, and then Corey does an amazing job on our Facebook page.
Thank you.
He Saw, She Saw.
You can also listen to us, apparently, on that page at the same time as you're looking at pictures. So
possibly.
That's an option.
Have they put that up yet? Or
I don't know, because when I look at it, I'm looking at it from, like, the creator perspective. I can't look at it from, like, a visitor's perspective. So I don't know if it's the same thing. Oh, I wonder if I could do view as...
I love you.
You're giving me the, yeah. Okay, I'm going to try that.
All right.
Anyway, so supposedly that's a thing that's happening. Yes, so that's our He Saw, She Saw Facebook page. We also mm-hmm. have a He Saw, She Saw podcast Instagram page, but it's not as good.
Yeah, it gives Corey limits, which is not.
I don't like limits.
Exactly.
Even though my boss used to say, don't be hung up on the things that you can't do. Be freed by the things you can.
I'm so glad no one's ever told me that.
They usually tell you that when they're like, yeah, you can't use this theater. Or, yeah, we're going to take the set away. Or, mm-hmm. yeah, this kid is gone now.
Yeah, it's not my problem. So with that, have a wonderful week.
Yes.
Be good to each other, and we will talk at you. Next week with The Crow and
Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh boy!
What I got messed up because you said your movie and I was okay. What? What's happening? Wolverines, come out and play!
No.